You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friends. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, February 27th. Actually, I think this is connecting the dots with Mark Shea. Or maybe it's, maybe it's Timothy Putnam's show. I'm sorry, I'm just imitating the Oscars last night. It is the Mike Allen Show. Steve Harvey relieved because he's no longer going to be the butt of jokes. Can you believe that? I don't know if you've heard the news, but Moonlight won Best Picture after they announced it was La La Land. The whole La La Land cast and directors and everybody up on stage giving their acceptance speeches with great gratitude, and then they were informed they'd been given the wrong card. Moonlight actually won. Wow. Wow. Something else. Anyway, I was in bed, but I got up and saw it this morning anyway, and we'll be talking about the Oscars with Mark Bentley at the bottom of the hour. Mark, who is a seminarian and also a cinephile. He loves his movies. We had him on a few weeks ago previewing the Oscars. Now we'll get his take on the winners last night, his take on the Oscars, the Academy Awards. You know, I know there were a number of people that I know that I saw on social media who were saying they were boycotting the Oscars. They don't need those liberals telling them what to do. They assumed there would be a lot of political speeches and so forth. You know, number one, from what I could sense watching it last night, it wasn't nearly as politically charged as I anticipated it would be. Oh, there were, of course, a few shots here and there at Trump and wall building and all the rest. But for the most part, I thought it was pretty tame, actually. But I would also say, anybody who thinks we need to keep politics out of the movies, that would be like saying, let's keep politics out of religion. I mean, the truth is that they all go together because politics is life, man. There's politics in a barbershop. There's politics in a daycare. There's politics everywhere you turn. Politics is just how we order our lives together. And even when you talk about elected politics, I mean, Hollywood forever has had a voice, and they've used that voice. You may not always agree with what they say, but they do have a voice, and, you know, they've got a right to use it. That's First Amendment. So anyway, I watched the Oscars last night, at least the part I watched, and thoroughly enjoyed it because there were a number of the movies that I had seen, and I thought it was a great year for filmmaking. But we'll get Mark Bentley's take on it a little bit later in the show. Some other things, of course, Lent coming up very quickly. Tomorrow, Fat Tuesday. Get your pancake mix ready. Shrove Tuesday, whatever you want to call it. And then Wednesday, we'll have Ash Wednesday, of course. And we'll enter into this season of spiritual discipline. But really, Lent is about continuing on this journey toward a singleness of heart, a singleness of mind. We'll talk a little bit about that today. Also, a story that I wasn't able to get to at the end of last week that I think is an important one, Facebook and its impact on journalism, and then some important questions for so-called sanctuary churches. An auxiliary bishop of Philadelphia calling on churches to become places of sanctuary, going back to centuries ago when people who were wanted for various offenses could find refuge in a church. Particularly this auxiliary bishop talking about it in terms of immigrants, undocumented immigrants who may fear deportation. So we'll talk about, I think, some important questions in that regard later in the show. Certainly welcome your calls anytime during the program. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. Question of the day, and I saw yesterday that the unexpected death of Bill Paxton, 61 years old. I haven't seen any other details than that he died due to complications from surgery. Maybe there's more info out there I can find out during the break. I always liked Bill Paxton, and he was rarely sort of a leading man. I guess movies like Twister being the exception. But he's kind of one of those guys who had one of those faces that, you know, maybe you didn't know the name Bill Paxton, but if somebody said, "Who's this person?" you've seen him in a lot of different movies, from Weird Science to, as I said, Twister, Apollo 13, a bunch of others. So my question of the day, as we certainly ask for eternal rest for Bill Paxton, that he will rest in the peace of Christ, I'm going to ask you, what's your favorite Bill Paxton film? 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, call or text, email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. I hope you had a good weekend. Mine was pretty good, though I was missing my wife and a couple of my kids off on a youth retreat. Friday afternoon, my 18-year-old daughter and I went to go see a movie that was brought back evidently for Oscar week, and that is Hell or High Water with Jeff Bridges. I would not recommend that film for all ages, but if you like Jeff Bridges, which I do, see that movie because it really is, it's good. It's got some great dialogue in it, and Chris Pine's really good as well. But Jeff Bridges, he was almost like a little bit younger and more sober Rooster Cogburn, if you saw his portrayal of the character made famous by John Wayne in the original True Grit. So got to see that on Friday. Saturday, I had the privilege of going to the 2017 Men's Conference sponsored here in Lexington in our diocese. There's a group called Catholic Men's Servant Leaders, and over the last 4 years, they've really worked hard to have events such as these to really challenge men in particular to grow in their faith, though Saturday's event was open, of course, to both genders. Anyway, I got to hear Bishop John Stowe, our bishop, speak, and what I thought were some very important words at the beginning of the conference. He gave a talk about the culture of encounter, as Pope Francis has termed it, and seeing in other people an opportunity to encounter the image of God. Then Scott Hahn, of course, most of you know who Scott Hahn is, prolific author, one of those guys who cranks out books like maybe other people crank out newspaper columns. Unbelievable. But he gave a great talk. I was only there the first half of it on the fatherhood of God. And then Marcel, I'm going to mispronounce his last name, Lejeune. He is from Texas A&M University's enormous student ministry down there. Aggie Catholic, they call it there at St. Mary's Parish, an amazing college ministry. Anyway, he was there to speak to, so that was good. And then also got to go see a baptism. Always love a baptism. Saturday night, some dear friends of ours just had their little boy, their seventh, actually, little boy. I'm not seventh boy, but seventh child. Little Maximilian Andrew. And got to be there privileged for his baptism. A lot of babies born to friends lately. The little Tobias, little Luke, and others. So certainly give thanks for that. And then yesterday, of course, had a marriage prep class with a bunch of, well, just three engaged couples, actually. So they had to spend an afternoon with me on a beautiful Sunday. Hopefully they'll get over their bitterness sometime soon. No, it was pretty good. Readings for today as we are prepping for Lent, as I said. It's great. We've been in the first readings. We've been in the book of Sirach, one of the seven books that distinguish the Catholic Bible from Protestant reductions of it. And Sirach, one of those books, chapter 17, to the penitent, God provides a way back. He encourages those who are losing hope and has chosen for them the lot of truth. I like that. To the penitent, God provides a way back. Sometimes that way back is particularly facilitated by the liturgical calendar. I was talking yesterday with these engaged couples. I was telling them that one of the things that I love about the sacraments is the way they're sort of placed and spaced across our lives, they really provide an opportunity, a doorway back in. I related to them when I was a kid. We would go every year just about, my family, on vacation to Florida. And sometimes we would be on the east coast of Florida. where the surf is a little stronger, and we would go down to the beach. And my parents were old school. Their job was not to get out buckets and build sandcastles with us. It was to slather on the oil, lie on a towel, and soak in the sun, probably doze off while my sisters and I splashed in the surf. So that's what we would do. We'd go down there. They'd lie on the towel. We'd go out and jump around in the waves, body surfing, and all the rest. Well, after maybe, 15, 20 minutes of playing, we'd look up to get our bearings, and oh my goodness, our parents had moved up the coast 50 yards. Well, what had they done? Had they picked up their towels and their bottles of Hawaiian Tropic and walked up the sand? No, of course not. What happened is we had imperceptibly drifted. The strength of the surf and the tide and everything had pulled us, even though we really weren't attuned to it. And I made the point that sometimes it's like that with our faith. It's not as if we somehow, in great defiance, walk away from God. We find ourselves drifting. Before long, we look up and our faith and the memory of it or whatever seems so far away. And the sacraments, like the sacrament of marriage, an opportunity to reconnect. Well, Lent is the same way. And it comes for all of us. To the penitent, God provides a way back. It's an opportunity to know that our Lord never ceases to call us, to invite us. And the beautiful thing, of course, is when there's this distance between us, read Luke 15, the prodigal son. While we walk, he runs. We'll be back with more. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media. I ran into a few people this weekend, particularly at the men's conference, and they said, "Well, I really miss hearing you on the radio because I'm no longer on AM/FM here in Central Kentucky as a part of the entity Real Life Radio." And they said, "Are you still doing a show?" And I said, "Yes, I'm still doing a show." They said something about Breadbox. I said, "Yes, Breadbox Media. Download the app if you have a smartphone. Now, if you don't have a smartphone, then you'll have to stream it some other way. But if you get the app into your smartphone, and it only takes a minute to download it, breadboxmedia.com, then you'll have that little icon on the front of your phone screen. All you got to do is tap it, and you got Breadbox in your pocket. So anyway, hopefully that'll spread around more and more. You can still enjoy the show. I was also privileged this weekend at my friend's baptism of their baby, of their infant, Maximilian, to meet Shelley, who's a regular listener to the program. So shout out to you, Shelley. Thanks for taking the time to introduce yourself. Anyway, if you want to learn more about Breadbox Media, or if you want to become a friend of your favorite show through a monthly contribution, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and you can get exclusive online access to some different aspects and my thoughts, as well as know that you're supporting something you believe in. So check it all out at breadboxmedia.com. Again, a question of the day. I don't know whether they mentioned anything at the Oscars last night. I need to find out. But Bill Paxton passing away unexpectedly at the age of 61, complications from surgery. What's your favorite Bill Paxton movie? Gotten a couple of comments from this on Facebook. Christy says Apollo 13. Which is a great, great film, a Ron Howard film. And then Mark says he did a great job in the Hatfields versus the McCoys. That was, I think, a made-for-television miniseries I didn't get a chance to see, but I want to. Others mentioned Titanic. Titanic, of course, he played the excavator who was in the real time, not traveling back in time to the young Rose and Jack and all the rest. Anyway, so let's see. There's a list here of some of his best memorable performance. Of course, his run is a Weird Science as Chet, many people remember. I liked him in Aliens as the really high-strung, pessimistic, "We're all going to die, man," or something along those lines. The sequel to Alien. Severin Near Dark, I never saw that film. Let's see, looking through for a few of these. Sleazy Car Salesman in Used Cars. I mean, in True Lies, sorry. Apollo 13, of course. He was in, of course, Twister. Oh, yeah, I'm glad they included this one. A Simple Plan. Have you ever seen this film? Now, it's extremely dark. I mean, it's one of those films that you will not leave with a good feeling in your stomach. But if you want to see a film that depicts how ordinarily decent people can become moral monsters, then A Simple Plan is for you. He's in it, Billy Bob Thornton, Gary Cole, I think, a powerful, powerful movie. And what happens is Bill Paxton, or Hank, and his brother and a friend find a plane crashed in the woods that has a $4 million stash in it. And they make the decision, rather than report their finding, to try to keep the money. And it all kind of goes downhill from there. There's a great line in that film. It actually comes from Bridget Fonda, who plays Bill Paxton, or Hank's wife, when he's worried that what he's done is going to be found out. Because, again, they spiral morally down pretty fast. She says, "Don't worry, Hank. People would never imagine that you're capable of doing the things you've done." Ooh. Anyway, so that's what I go with. So if you've got one, Frailty also, a very dark movie, if you've seen that, with he and Matthew McConaughey and some others. So anyway, rest in peace, Bill Paxton, no doubt. We were talking before the break about Lent being an opportunity to experience penitence, to God providing a way back. Sometimes we may think, well, you know, really, I haven't drifted. You know, maybe Lent for me is optional, superfluous, whatever. Well, then we throw in the gospel reading today for good measure. It's the man who set out on a journey, Jesus sets out on a journey. A man runs up, kneels down before him, and asks him. It's actually part of a series of passages in Mark. Once we've passed the transfiguration, things are becoming darker, more intense as Jesus heads toward Jerusalem. And you get this increasing sense of the cost of discipleship. You know, those who kind of showed up for the highlights, for the healings, the miracles, the loaves and the fishes, are being winnowed out as it becomes more challenging to follow Jesus. And there's sort of a series of these types of encounters that Jesus has with persons who, at least on the outside, seem to want to follow him, until they discover that to do so is going to cost them. And so we have this young man who kneels down and asks Jesus, "Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" And that's where Jesus runs through the commandments. You know, "You shall not kill, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, bear false witness, you shall not defraud, honor your father and mother." He replied and said to him, "Teacher, all of these I have observed from my youth." Jesus, looking at him, loved him and said to him, "You're lacking in one thing. Go sell what you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come follow me." With that statement, his face fell and he went away sad, for he had many possessions. You know, one of the things I remember preaching on this passage back in my Methodist pastor days, and I think I titled the sermon something like "True Financial Freedom." And we, like so many things when it comes to our faith and the demands of being a disciple, you know, we've been talking about the Sermon on the Mount, and you know, we've been reading those in the Sunday readings. Yesterday's reading you know, be anxious for nothing. You know, look at the birds of the air, look at the flowers of the field. Your Heavenly Father knows what they need, their clothes. Seek first the kingdom, all that. Well, then the very next day we have this passage. It's a great examination of conscience for us. And just like the Sermon on the Mount turns the world's value system on its ear, well, when we consider what real financial freedom is, what would our world tell us and our culture tell us? And we all bought largely hook, line, and sinker. That financial freedom is having enough money not to have to worry. Man, I hope I can win the lottery. Because if I win the lottery, I won't have to worry about money anymore. Sometimes you get caught up in that. You fantasize winning the Powerball. You imagine, what must it be like to not have to worry about money anymore? That's financial freedom. You know, investing companies come on TV, call Chuck, whatever. We want to invest right so that we can really have financial freedom. But you know what financial freedom is? I think according to this gospel, financial freedom is the freedom to walk away from it. Who was free here? It wasn't this young man who, when given the challenge to sell his possessions and give the money to the poor so that he could follow Jesus and inherit the eternal life he desired, his face fell because he had many possessions. It wasn't the wealthy man who had financial freedom. Jesus looked around at his disciples and said how hard it is for those who have wealth to enter the kingdom of God. The disciples were amazed at his words, right? Because the world that they lived in, just as the world we live in, values the wealthy, envies the wealthy, admires the wealthy, and yet wealth is an obstacle. Now, this is usually where we're quick to jump in and point out, well, of course, you know, Jesus isn't telling everyone to sell all they have. It's not about whether you have money, it's whether money has you. Boy, we get there quick, don't we? Problem is, it's not so easy for money to not have us. And so, if you don't think you need to prep for Lent, buddy, we all do. I'm just telling you right now. Because that singleness of heart, that abandonment, the kind of life Jesus portrays and extols in the Sermon on the Mount is so far from us. And yet, by God's grace, it's possible with him. Possible for him to make us into the kind of person who doesn't look back with regret at the attachments we've left behind, but delights in the freedom from coming that comes with an undivided heart. I love that prayer for the Psalms. Give me an undivided heart that I may revere your name. Most of us, very, very divided, no doubt. Anyway, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk to Mark Bentley. On the Oscars last night. He's an hour earlier, so if he stayed up and watched through the whole thing, then kudos to him. That shows you the kind of pre-Lenten sacrifices somebody can make. So we'll have Mark on the program. We'll talk about the Oscars, the winner of Best Picture last night, Moonlight, after, as Mark will explain, maybe the biggest snafu in Oscar history. Best Actor, Casey Affleck. Best Actress, Emma Stone, supporting actor Mahershala Ali, and supporting actress Viola Davis. Well deserved, in my opinion. Well, we'll be back in just a minute with more. This is the Mike Allen Show, and you're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
We're right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show, joined by my friend, seminarian, Mark Bentley, cinephile. Mark is at beautiful St. Meinrad, Indiana, where he is working toward, God willing, transitional diaconate and then priesthood. He's also a movie lover, stayed up to watch the Oscars. We had him on a few weeks ago after the Oscar nominees were announced, and now we've got him on. He's up really early, making his Lenten sacrifice early. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well. So you stayed up all the way last night until the snafu.
Yes, I did. I mean, it's one of the greatest Oscar upsets. I mean, if nothing had gone wrong, it would have been one of the greatest Oscar upsets. What we have is one of the greatest Oscar upsets combined with one of the most bewildering Oscar snafus. There's not been anything like this happen at the Oscars in my lifetime. There's been a couple of bumps. I think back in the 30s, there was a wrong Best Director winner announced. In the 60s, there was the wrong category announced, but never like this in our day and age. It's astonishing.
Yeah, it was, for those who've not seen it, and I'm sure it'll be all over the news today, Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, they're together, a reprise of their Bonnie and Clyde partnership. Great movie, by the way. But they're, you know, reading the card. But you can tell when Warren Beatty was, he opened the card to announce the winner, and evidently his card said Emma Stone, who had just won Best Actress. He stumbled for a minute. He wasn't sure what to do, and he handed it to Faye Dunaway, who then said La La Land, and the stage gets crashed by, of course, all the La La Land people celebrating, giving their speeches, and then all of a sudden a flurry of activity, and they announced that the actual winner was Moonlight.
That's right. And by that point of the night, La La Land was the expected winner. It had done well at the Directors Guild Award, the Producers Guild Awards, the British Oscars, that already won 6 Oscars, including Best Director, which is normally a very good predictor of who's going to win Best Picture. So it wasn't a surprise at that point. It was it came in with 14 nominations. It was the Goliath of the night. And then to have that taken away in such a spectacular moment, honestly, for a while there, it looked like Moonlight had kind of faded a little. You know, people have been talking about upset possibilities from Manchester by the Sea or even Hidden Figures. But it looked like Moonlight had kind of gone in the background a little. But, wow, it finished strong.
Yeah, and it was a very, from the things that I've read, it was a very low-budget film. And it has not made a ton of money either because, you know, not that many people have seen it. But the reviews that I have seen, especially from reviewers I really like Alyssa Wilkinson and Stephen Gray Donis, Alyssa, an evangelical, Stephen Gray Donis, a Catholic, of course, they've all been very, very high on it. And I know that some of them, there were people who considered it the best picture. They just didn't think it had a chance to win.
Exactly. And I know that some people are wondering what happened. How did this happen? Well, from what I understand, from what I've read, the accounting firm that tabulates the results, PricewaterhouseCoopers, takes two briefcases with identical sets of envelopes to the Oscars, and they hand them out alternately from each side of the stage. So somehow or another, Warren Beatty got the extra Best Actress envelope, and they only realized it once people from La La Land were on the stage giving speeches, and they went out there and made the correction, as they've always said that is their policy, but they've never had to do since at least the 60s.
Hmm. You know, one of the things that... I know there were people who said, oh, I'm not going to watch the Oscars, it's too political, and so forth and so on. And then, after I think Meryl Streep's Golden Globes speech and so forth. And I think it's unfortunate because, well, for one thing, I didn't think the awards ceremony was nearly as politically charged as I expected. But the second thing is, I mean, there were some beautiful moments. I mean, case in point, I think whichever, I can't remember which La La Land person it was who stepped to the mic to say that actually Moonlight won, and he seemed genuinely pleased. I mean, you know, that I thought it was a virtuous response to a terrible moment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's one of the things I've been reading about for the past several hours, how gracious, how welcoming these producers from La La Land were. And I think I saw a clip from Best Actress winner Emma Stone saying how happy she was that Moonlight won. So there seems to be a lot of passion around Moonlight. Now, I have to admit, last night, most of the show went as expected, especially those acting awards. You had Casey Affleck winning for Manchester by the Sea. It looked like for a while Denzel Washington might have won for Fences, but Casey Affleck came through. Emma Stone, Mahershala Ali for Moonlight was very much expected, as was Viola Davis in Fences, who gave a beautiful speech. Now, I think that there are many other occupations that give kind of that show the beauty of a life. I think priesthood is one of them, but it was still a beautiful speech about the importance of stories and the everyday stories of average people.
Yeah, I'll just read a quote from it here. I really like Viola Davis, and I thought her performance was just it left me frozen to my seat after the film was over. It was so good. She said, you know, there's one place that all the people with the greatest potential are gathered, one place, and that's the graveyard. People ask me all the time, what kind of stories do you want to tell, Viola? And I say, exhume those bodies, exhume those stories, the stories of the people who dreamed big and never saw those dreams to fruition, people who fell in love and lost. I became an artist, and thank God I did, because we're the only profession that celebrates what it means to live a life. Yeah, like you, I'd quibble with that, the only profession, but even with that aside, not the typical stock acceptance speech.
Exactly. I mean, a really beautiful, powerful moment. And I was watching it with several people, and we were all just absolutely floored. Again, we would quibble about that last little bit, but up until that point, it was just pitch perfect. And again, she earned that Oscar. She gave a beautiful performance, one for the ages.
You know, one of the things you couldn't help but notice after last year's criticisms the Oscars received for its sort of monochrome winners, you had a lot of color in the winners this year, you know, with Viola Davis, Mahershala Ali, of course, Moonlight, which is a largely black film. You know, that should mute some of that criticism, I would think.
I certainly think so. I love La La Land, but it's the whitest film you'll ever see, because it's just Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, and then John Legend pops up for a cameo. But it's not a film with a large ensemble of diverse people. But I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say I'm seeing some in the Twitter world and stuff, and some critics who now it's sort of becoming popular to say La La Land is a bit overrated.
I would disagree. I mean, I think La La Land, it's a beautiful story, well told, well crafted. I think there's a lot going on. One of the priests here at St. Meinrad is head over heels over it. He believes that it's a message about celibacy.
Really? Huh.
Yeah. I still don't understand exactly where he's coming from, but the idea of sacrifice, of kind of working towards a goal, I think there's a lot to La La Land, and it's a great time. It's a great movie.
What would you say to those who say we need to get politics out of Hollywood?
I would say that movie stars and directors have a right to have their opinions, just as we have a right to have our opinions. To ask somebody who, just because their job is to be an entertainer, they can't have thoughts or feelings or stances of their own, it's a bit dehumanizing. At the same time, I do think that Hollywood could be a bit more open and accepting to many viewpoints, especially our Catholic Christian viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't ask people to be robots. You can't.
Yeah, and you know, I guess the way I look at it, I mean, I think if you go back, I mean, even in the earliest days of filmmaking, has always been political because it's been about messages about our society, and so you really can't make movies politics free.
Exactly. Art can be beautiful. It can also be a little uncomfortable at times.
Are there a lot of cinephiles like you in the seminary there?
There are. St. Mater does a really good job of kind of encouraging us to look for truth and beauty in all kinds of different forms of art, film being one of them. And it's a way to stretch our imagination. It's a way for us to learn how to tell stories and therefore be preachers of the word, be interpreters of the word, you know, and also to be able to communicate with people, maybe using popular culture as an example. I did a practice homily a few weeks ago, my first one ever. I pulled in the image of Cinderella, the fairy godmother.
Oh, that's great. Hey, Mark, we're going to have to let you go. We're out of time, unfortunately. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike.
Blessings on your continued studies, and we'll keep
you in
prayer, okay?
Okay.
All right, Mark. We'll be back in a minute with more here on The Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Before the hour, you're back on The Mike Allen Show. Really appreciate Mark Bentley, and he was telling me off the air, of course, he's trying to weave some of his movie's themes into his preaching, and recently, using Cinderella, made sure we knew God was not a fairy godmother. So, it's good stuff. Thanks for saying yes, Mark. We'll pray for your continued formation and all those who are in that process of discerning calls to priesthood, religious life, to such important vocations in the church. If you want to chime in on anything we've talked about so far or our question of the day in memory of the late Bill Paxton, who passed away yesterday at the age of 61, the actor, what's your favorite Bill Paxton film? 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Going on the show's Facebook page, I think we've gotten a few comments on this question, too, which you can always go there through social media. Let me see really quick. Let me pull this up. Give me just a second, and I'll get it. Moving a little slow here on a Monday, but hopefully you can't blame me. I meant to ask him whether there was any mention of Bill Paxton at the Oscars last night. I don't get a sense that there was. Happened so late there before the event started. So anyway, let's see any responses on this question. Let's see. Nope. Yeah, we saw. I'm sorry. Dave says Weird Science. He was always Chet to me. Michael says Aliens and Terminator, then Stripes. Now, while Stripes, he had just a bit part. I don't think he even had a speaking part. Terminator, I don't think I realized he was in that. Allison said, I know it's technically not his movie, but I liked him in Titanic. And Todd says, loved him in Apollo 13. So chime in if you want. My Kentucky Wildcats were the big win this weekend. Yes! Against the Florida Gators after getting their heads handed to them just a few weeks ago down in Gainesville. Bounced back even without point guard De'Aaron Fox and won by 10 with Malik Monk having a second half for the ages. 30 points, my goodness, and 15 and rebounds and 18 points for Bam Adebayo. If they can get production like that from Bam, you know, I still think Elite Eight's the ceiling for this team, but maybe I'll be proven wrong. I hope so. They've got the talent for sure. Whether they can play the defense required to make a long run through the tournament, we'll just have to wait and see. I did notice Michigan State winning a big game over 16th ranked Wisconsin last night is Tom Izzo. You know, his team's kind of been on the bubble. Is he getting his team in the door? And if so, that's a team you don't want to play. Tom Izzo, a pretty good track record. Duke going down this weekend, of course. They did not have Grayson Allen. So they dropped a defensive struggle, I guess you could say, 55-50 to Miami. Still don't know what to make of Duke. And Louisville with a big win over Syracuse by 20. Syracuse, who seemed to be rolling, now reeling a little bit, and they're a bubble team as well. So we'll keep an eye on that. We've only got a couple weeks of, actually 1 week of the regular season, then conference tournaments. I need to talk to my friend Father Frank Bronner so we can get bracketology with Father Bronner back up in Adam again. One thing I wanted to get to at the end of last week was this column from The Atlantic by Adrian LaFrance, who's actually been a guest on the program before. The Mark Zuckerberg Manifesto, she writes, is a blueprint for destroying journalism. She writes, it's not that Mark Zuckerberg set out to dismantle the news business when he founded Facebook 13 years ago. Yet news organizations are perhaps the biggest casualty of the world Zuckerberg built. She said there's a reason to believe things are going to get worse. Evidently, Zuckerberg has put out a sprawling new manifesto. She said that should set off new alarm bells for journalists and heighten a sense of urgency from news organizations about how they can survive in a Facebook-dominated world. As she says, Facebook's existing threat to journalism is well established because at its core, it's about the flow of advertising dollars that news organizations once counted on. She traces part of this back to the entity Craigslist in 1995. Craig Newmark, who founded it, didn't try to decimate newspapers, but still, Craigslist stole away a crucial revenue stream when people stopped buying classified ads. Craigslist was the first signal of a massive unbundling of news services that would diminish the power and reach of the news and make it more difficult to produce a profitable news product. She says Zuckerberg's memo outlines a plan for the next phase of this unbundling, and it represents an expansion of Facebook's existing threat to the news industry. She said Facebook already has the money. I mean, the staggering nature of Facebook's enterprise. She said it notched $8.8 billion in revenue, more than $7 billion of which came from mobile ad sales. One analyst told the New York Times last year that 85% of all online advertising revenue is funneled to either Facebook or Google, leaving only 15% for news organizations to fight over. And now Zuckerberg is making it clear that he wants Facebook to take over many of the actual functions, not just ad dollars, that traditional news organizations once had. LaFrance goes on to say that in the past, the death of news organizations has jeopardized the prospect of a safe, well-informed, civically engaged community. In other words, you know, our news sources, journalistic enterprises going to be able to have the income in a Facebook world to be able to continue to operate and to be a voice, a check, let's say, in a world that desperately needs it? I think it's an important question. Now, you may say, oh, mainstream media, lamestream media, down it goes. It's good for everybody. You know, they've had a monopoly on the news way too long. Yeah, but the danger is it sort of accelerates this postmodern, post-truth world we live in which in our sort of tribal mentalities online, we gravitate toward those news sources that affirm us in what we already believe. And it no longer becomes really about any sort of connection with objective truth as it does who can shout fake news the loudest. I mean, quite honestly. And so we better be careful of what we wish for because I happen to believe and agree with LaFrance to a degree that good journalism and some of this, I mean, you can't blame Facebook. I mean, Facebook's doing what a capital society's all about to one level. But maybe the question needs to be asked, just because Facebook can do it, should they do it? It's an important question. Anyway, I'll post a link to this article. You can kind of read it for yourself. The other thing I wanted to touch on very briefly, this is CatholicPhilly.com, and we have to get into this a little bit more tomorrow. An interesting article, CatholicPhilly.com. Leaders call for Catholic sanctuary movement to blunt deportation crackdown. You know, my wife was with some youth from our parish, some of whom are English-speaking some were Hispanic, part of a Hispanic group that was there. She said heavy on the minds of these Hispanic youth is the prospect of deportation, of the splitting up of their parents. Perhaps their parents came here illegally or they're undocumented. And now, you know, despite the talk early on from the Trump administration that they were only about deporting the bad guys and criminals, there's a real fear now that there's going to be more deportations and a much more intentional effort to cull out those who are here as undocumented immigrants, some of whom are doing nothing to harm our culture at all. And there have been calls now, including an auxiliary bishop, Bishop Edward L. Delaman of Philadelphia, pastor of St. Charles Borromeo. He received a standing ovation when he told his congregation February 18th that what would be disruptive would be if we would declare our parish a sanctuary church, a place for people to find safety who are under threat of deportation. We'll talk about this more tomorrow because I think there's some important questions involved in the sanctuary church movement. But, you know, I think there's some good points to be made. 176, we're spinning up our Dial a Catechism wheel. We've dialed up 176. See what Providence has in store for us today from this great repository of the faith. This is toward the beginning on the issue of faith. Faith is a personal adherence of the whole man to God who reveals himself. It involves an assent of the intellect and will to the self-revelation God has made through his deeds and words. Boy, that's an important and there. It involves an assent of the intellect and will to the self-revelation God has made through his deeds and words. It's not just enough about to believe mentally in certain doctrinal propositions. I mean, the devil knows the truth. Read the Gospels. The demons know Jesus is the Son of God. But what about our will? My guess is that Lent is a time for us to come to grips with that second part, with our will. Because we can believe mentally, but will we surrender sometimes our own priorities, just like the rich young man in today's gospel reading? Will we surrender our will? That's the question. And that's why we need Lent particularly. But we're not there yet, so enjoy your Fat Tuesday tomorrow when I'll be back with you. God willing, this is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.